Hello and welcome to Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I'm the author of the first published investigation about the Post Office's Horizon IT system when I worked for Computer Weekly in 2009.
And I'm Nick Wallace, author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal, and we are currently in a rather noisy place outside the International Dispute Resolution Centre, which was the site of the second of two hearings into the extraordinarily knotty issue of postmaster compensation.
Coming up in this episode, we'll have a very quick chat about the key takeaways from today's hearing. And after that, Nick interviewed Flora Page, who represents three of the former sub-postmasters, Janet Skinner, Tracy Felsted and Seema Misra.
And I also managed to get a word with Janet, Tracy and Seema as well. And you spoke to Parmod Kalia, a former sub-postmaster, who's in quite an invidious position, but we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, Rebecca, you were here throughout the hearing. What really struck you about what you heard today?
Well, we heard from several people today, and the first one was the barrister representing Bayes, which is the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. They're effectively the owner of the post office.
Yeah.
The sole shareholder.
I was going to say the department formerly known as Biz, but that's not funny anymore.
I don't think it was ever funny.
It was a Prince reference.
Didn't get it. So I found their submissions really interesting when compared to the post office last week. They were quite contrite. He even said, "I don't seek to defend the department," held up their hands in terms of delays, the things that the department had done wrong.
He was very straight up, I thought. He didn't want to sort of hide behind anything, and he seems to, I think, be empowered by the fact that the former minister, Paul Scully, who's now moved on, was very, very keen, and he quoted Paul Scully several times, including the line from Mr. Scully that this was the highest in his list of departmental priorities. So as a barrister essentially instructed by the civil servants at the government, I think he was keen to point out that the government were moving forward as quickly as they possibly could with all this. And of course they're able to do so because the Treasury has released the funds. So I suppose there's no reason why he wouldn't be like he was, but there was an element of candour, I think, about the way he spoke.
There was. So, for example, he talked a little bit about why the delays had happened. And one concrete example that he gave was that the post office had planned its resources on the underlying assumption that the original applications to the Horizon Shortfall Scheme, HSS, would have been in the hundreds. And, of course, it turned out to be over 2,500, which meant that the post office couldn't fund the scheme. It required a substantial amount of taxpayers' money. So it was really interesting to hear the actual detail of why, of what had happened, what had gone wrong. Actually interesting to hear somebody representing a government department holding up their hands and saying we got it wrong.
Yeah, I think for anyone who's coming cold to this, the way that this scandal has moved after various convictions have been quashed and various High Court and Court of Appeal rulings is that there are now lots of postmasters who are deserving of compensation, but they fall into various different categories. And what you just mentioned about the historical shortfall scheme, the HSS, was the first scheme, I think, to be set up, which was mandated by the settlement which happened after the High Court ruling in 2019. But from all accounts, it's been an absolute bodge job. The post office completely underestimated how many people would be applying to it, as you just said. And when it came to actually dealing with the applications, the phrase low-hanging fruit has been used a number of times, that the post office has basically settled the smaller, straightforward claims. But there are a lot of complicated claims that simply haven't got anywhere near a resolution. And this scheme closed in 2020. And there was that key moment today where the Bayes barrister said that the terms, the specific elements that applicants to the scheme could apply for, were not actually described to them in clear terms until after the closing date of the scheme itself, which Sir Wynne Williams, the chair of the inquiry, seemed a little bit bemused by. Who did we have next?
We had
Tim Maloney,
doing really well with names, who was speaking on behalf of Hudgell's solicitors. They've commissioned medical reports for each of their 63 core parties, each of their 63 postmasters, and said that a number have severe and enduring psychiatric issues following their experiences. Also, a number have developed physical problems as a result of those. They offered, just to give an example of where this compensation process is going wrong sometimes, one person who has experienced a stress-related illness which turned into a physical condition had to take 3 years off work and was offered by the post office £15,000.
What else do you want to say about what Tim had to say?
That 20% of the Hudgell claimants have become bankrupt, which I just thought was
I had no idea that it was that high.
It was so high.
And there was high drama towards the end of Mr. Maloney's submission when we were all booted out of the hearing room. And normally I wouldn't mention something like this, but during that false alarm, it was some sort of odd alarm that went off. It wasn't a fire alarm, it was an alarm that required us to vacate the building, but it turned out to be a false alarm. During that break, Sam Steen, QC, who spoke to the inquiry last week, had a conversation with Mr. Chapman from Bayes, and they have agreed in principle what may become known as the Paternoster Protocol, because they had this conversation in Paternoster Square just outside the International Dispute Resolution Centre. And the upshot of this protocol was that Freeths, who are working with the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance and the government, will provide a schedule of GLO claimants to Bayes setting out the Freeths distribution methodology and the amount payable to that group. Then Bayes will pay Freeths the sum of money that it is required to within a week, and then within a similar timetable, Freeths will pay the interim compensation, that £19.5 million that was announced by the government a couple of weeks back, to the individual claimants, also within a week. And he said, now this was obviously a verbal agreement and it might need firming up, but it does look as if, thanks to that false alarm, that the government have agreed to divvy up and distribute the £19.5 million, which goes to a separate group of compensation claimants, which are the GLO claimants. But we can't call them the 555 anymore, can we, Rebecca?
Yeah, but I still haven't. I can't understand why.
Right. It's because of that 555, those who have had convictions, which have now been quashed, are not part of that compensation group. They are into yet another different compensation group.
Lots of overlap between the different groups.
Goodness me. Shall we listen to what one of the people who contributed to today's hearing had to say?
Yes, let's.
Good. Right, this is Flora Page, and I basically wanted to just get an overall understanding of the key point that she was trying to get across to the inquiry today.
That the people who have had their convictions overturned but were part of the group litigation are a really special group of people, and they deserve to be fully empowered to get compensation. And so what I was saying was that if they're able to resolve matters between themselves and the post office and get a good settlement agreement which everyone is happy with, then fine. But if not, the post office should absolutely not be able to say, okay, well, if you don't like it, you've got to sue us again. In other words, you know, that's the only way that you can deal with the fact that you don't like what we offer you is that you have to go and take action against us again in some either ADR, arbitration or litigation, was the words that the post office used last time. So what we're saying is, no, if there's a new scheme being set up by Bayes for other people who were in the group litigation but who didn't have their convictions overturned, well, there's nothing to stop that scheme also applying if people want to use it who have had their convictions overturned. So it's just a sort of a fallback, if you like. It's a way that that group can be empowered in their negotiations and know that they won't have to go to court again if those negotiations fail.
Is your understanding then that this scheme that Bayes are in the process of setting up with the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance and Freeths will be independently arbitrated, that the post office will not have the final say on what the compensation should be?
That's the way it's looking. That's the communication from Bayes at the moment, yes. But obviously it's all up for negotiation, but that's the way it's heading.
So your clients, Seema, Janet and Tracy, should be able to, if they want to, opt into that, now they've had their convictions quashed and look to seek resolution that way, which takes the post office out of the picture and the prospect of further litigation.
That's what we're asking for.
Should they also have the option of directly negotiating with the post office, should they choose to, and perhaps litigating, should they decide that that's the only sensible route to go?
Yes.
Okay, how receptive do you think the inquiry is being to all the issues that have been swirling around over the last two hearings? Because there are so many, not least the issue of people who were prosecuted but didn't actually get convicted and therefore have no convictions to overturn, where they sit in all this sort of thing. I mean, there are so many different moving parts to this. For people who might be coming to this cold, how would you summarise it all?
It's been a bit ad hoc, shall we say. And really, it would have been preferable for everyone if there'd been a sort of a more clear plan of action before the inquiry had to sort of say, well, what's going on? Because really all of this action that has started happening lately seems to be a response to the inquiry saying, okay, what's going on? You know, tell us, make some submissions, let's find out. Because during those human impact hearings, obviously, the inquiry started to become concerned and worried about people with various different issues, as you're describing, people in slightly different historic roles, if you like. The inquiry says, OK, that doesn't look like it's being catered for properly. Let's look into this. Let's find out what's going on. And then suddenly, in reaction to that, we're getting all these kind of ad hoc schemes cropping up all over the place. Preferable, really, it would have been to take a grip on this earlier on and try to get something more sensible and structured from the outset. But there we are. We are where we are. I think the inquiry is clearly open to listening to trying to make things go in the right direction from this point onwards.
It does seem enormously sclerotic, the entire process, trying to get the post office to adopt the right attitude to all of this, trying to get some movement within Bayes that finally cracked open the GLO compensation issue. I mean, Sam Steen was very strong on the need for this to be sorted out quickly. In fact, he seems to have cut a deal with the government during that false alarm that we had during the break, where he came back saying, well, look, we think we can expedite these interim payments within about 3 weeks. It's been an illustration to me that were it not for Sir Wyn Williams shining his inquiry's light on this process, this could be dragging on still further. I mean, we're now, what, 2.5 years since the GLO concluded, and 1.5 years since the first convictions were quashed. It just doesn't seem right, because these people are, you know, heading towards the other part of their lives, the part of their lives that they don't have much time left.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is great that the inquiry has done what it's done, and we can only hope that that does now mean that there really will be some resolution. I think everyone would like to see some kind of resolution of these issues before the end of the year, really, at the latest.
So is that your personal ambition, that for your clients, Janet, Tracy and Seema, that you will be able to say that even if the cheque hasn't landed, we've all agreed what you're going to get, you're happy with it, and you can go on and live the rest of your lives without, hopefully, too much discomfort and pain? Or do you think this is going to drag on? Because, I mean, the issue of bankruptcy and insolvency came up today, and that's I know it doesn't directly affect your guys necessarily, but it is another huge issue for those people who are in that position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I dare say all of us would have as an ambition the idea that let's get this wrapped up by the end of the year. But as you say, there are lots and lots of different things that might prevent that from happening. And you know, there is, of course, also the final point that I made, which is that everyone might want to leave open the possibility of revisiting the idea of what lawyers call punitive damages, because, you know, even, and I would hope that we will be able to resolve a payment in respect of punitive damages long before the inquiry finishes. Should that really be a final payment when the inquiry is still yet to really make its decisions on the extent of the wrong?
Is that because there may well still be further things exposed during the course of the inquiry, documents which have yet to come to light, which lay bare the true scale of what was happening and the level of deceit that was going on within the post office?
Yeah, because I think one of the really open issues still at this point, what hopefully the inquiry will be able to get some headway on is to what extent this was accident and to what extent this was design. And that question is pretty huge when it comes to what we might call punitive damages.
The big problem in all of this seems to be the post office, the HSS, the Historical Shortfall Scheme. Hearing the faults that have been highlighted by all the representations that have been made to the inquiry last week and today suggests that it's struggling to be fit for purpose. Sam Steen described it as a potential scandal within a scandal. And the common factor running through this story is the post office. And that's presumably why so many people want them completely removed from the compensation process. Justice strikes me about fairness, and I'm not entirely sure that there's much evidence that the post office has gone into the issue of compensation with fairness at the forefront of its mind. How would you characterise their behaviour?
It doesn't bode well, does it, that they haven't even paid back the money which they took following following convictions. As Sir Wynne said today, they only were able to take that money because of the wrongful convictions. It's been over a year since the 39 convictions were overturned, and yet still absolutely no movement on that. And that should have been just proactively done within the first few weeks. So, you know, here we are with claimants, victims, not even recompensed to that extent.
Yeah, and these are pretty easy sums to calculate because they were the ones that were taken off them in the first place. And you spelled it out in the inquiry today. Seema lost her central London flat. That was just taken off her and sold. Janet was chased for sums even after she thought she'd cleared everything away from the post office, and that led to all sorts of health episodes which nearly killed her. And Tracy, that awful story of her parents believing that if they paid back the missing £11,000 she might be spared jail, it not saving her anyway, and that just disappeared into the post office's coffers as well. Are the representations that you can make directly to the post office about this, I mean, why does it always have to go through endless schemes?
Well, that's right, and that's why, you know, I chose that example, because it seemed to me that was an indication of how the post office could show, if they really were minded to make a change with the past, to break with the past, for the historic failings to really be historic, this is one area where they could have just done that so straightforwardly. Here's the sums of money that we took off you post-conviction, have it back.
So that was Nick talking to Flora Page, and shortly afterwards you caught up with her clients Seema, Janet and Tracy to hear what they thought of the hearing.
Okay, notwithstanding the helicopter, which is just disappearing off into the distance.
Trip home.
Oh, is that how you're getting home, Janet? All right. Notwithstanding the helicopter, which will soon be landing to whisk Janet Skinner back up north, and the angle grinder, which is still going off in the background, I've managed to find myself with Janet Skinner, Tracy Felstead and Seema Misra, who are Flora Page's clients and who were all here at the inquiry today. What did everyone make of what was said over the hearing about compensation?
I would definitely say mixed feelings about it. I think too many people are wanting it to go in too many different directions. I think it needs to be compacted into like either this direction or that direction. As it stands at the minute, you've got it like streaming off. It's meandering in all different directions, and I don't think that'll be good.
There are so many moving parts to all this. You just wonder whether or not someone should be appointed almost as a compensation czar,
yes,
separate from Bayes, separate from the inquiry, but feeding into both, and have the power to make some real decisions about,
yes,
what's going on. Did you draw any comfort from what you heard today, Tracy?
I think we did. I was very impressed with what Flora had to say, and all the other representatives as well. As Janet said, it's going in all different ways. I think as the clients here, we need clarity as to what direction we're going to go in, and that something that's suitable for everybody. So, you know, not one person's left out of one scheme. You know, we need to be, there needs to be clarity over all of it, and somebody needs to take charge. So I'm hoping that Sir Wynne sticks around.
Yeah, he seems to be making pertinent interventions. That's probably the sort of most neutral thing I can say at the moment. I don't know how he's going to come down, but he's picking the little holes in the in the arguments that are coming forward, aren't they? Seema, you were here for last week's session as well. Have you got any more clarity or understanding about, I mean, the most important thing here, which is about actually getting the compensation, the fair compensation, the agreed and final compensation in your bank account?
Yeah, hopefully soon, because I set a figure to myself, you know, figure and the date to myself, like by the end of this year, you know, don't want to drag it more and more. Like, not just physically, we're mentally tired now, so it's like, just want to get over it, at least some sort of like a figure by the end of this year, that where we stand.
I know that many sub-postmasters have been looking for seven figures worth of compensation, and I mean, given what the three of you went through, I don't think anyone would think that that was not the bare minimum. I mean, I know some postmasters have looked for eight figures compensation for future loss of earnings that they may have suffered, and yet we heard that the post office were initially offering five figures worth of compensation, and that was very recently. So there has been progress, as you heard from Hodgell solicitors talking about the independent evaluator, which I know you guys aren't part of, but there seemed to be some potential agreement for you being able to sort of use the same methodology when it comes to assessing where you are. But if the post office are starting from five figures and the postmasters are starting from six or seven, I mean, that really doesn't bode well, does it?
There's a massive gap between that. And I think what the post office need to realise is they're the ones that have done wrong. So I don't understand why they're protected by so many legal teams. When we was done wrong, we was protected by legal aid and legal aid only. We wasn't given all of these legal teams around us to sort of like wrap us in cotton wool. Well, I think the post office are getting wrapped in cotton wool. And I just don't think that they should be the ones that give a final say of how much money is being issued to people. If they was in our position, or if they had a family member in our position, would they want their family member to settle at a five-figure sum? I don't think so.
What did you think of the Bayes barrister? So he made the first submission today. Bayes is the business department, which actually is the shareholder of the post office. He went first. What do you think, Trace?
I think the things he was saying were quite, you know, they seem to know what they're talking about. They seem to be going in the right direction, but it's, we need to see that whether that actually happens, and whether they can stick to that. But also, it's, you know, making sure that everybody's happy. Obviously, there are loads of us. You've got the convicted criminals. You've got the ones who, you know, the ones who were convicted. But you've also got the ones who went through the court process and were not prosecuted. You've got the ones that weren't prosecuted at all. That everybody has still had a loss of some sort. And they need to make sure that everything is correct and is up to standard. And at the minute, I don't think they're doing that.
Yeah, I had a couple of really interesting conversations just outside, or just here, after the hearing. And I asked about people like Nicola Arch, someone who's been prosecuted but not convicted, and there wasn't a huge amount of clarity, but it does seem as if that she is going to be put back with all the GLO claimants. So all the GLO claimants who had their convictions quashed will go off in one direction into this scheme, which is being run by Bayes, I think.
No.
Not being run by the post office. Where are you? Because that's your group, isn't it? Yeah.
So group B, which is people who have had convictions overturned, are going to be headed by Herbert Smith, Freehills, and the post office. So we're not part of the Bayes one, and we're also excluded from the GLO one.
Okay, and people like Nicola Arch, who wasn't convicted, she'll go back into the new, GLO, as yet to be decided GLO scheme. Yeah. I didn't know. So HSF and Post Office are the people you're negotiating with to get your compensation.
Yeah. Which is what I don't think is right. I don't think the Post Office should have the right, because what Bayes did say today is we are righting the wrongs and making them right, but the Post Office still don't admit that they're wrong. So I don't understand why they have the power to decide who gets what when they can't even accept that they've done wrong in the first place.
Except them, everybody's coming forward and taking the responsibility, and they didn't accept post office, and they're still spending all the money on the legal team and all, and tons of them. as you mentioned, they need to put a cap on it, like how much they're allowed to put it on to the... They're saying they're using public fund, they're using base money and all that. So why they get to choose their how much they spend on legally?
My thanks to Janet Skinner, Tracy Felstead and Seema Misra. Now, this next interview, which Rebecca picked up after the hearing today, is with Parmod Kalia. Now, Parmod is a gentleman who's very close to my heart. I first met him on the first day of the first trial at the group litigation, and we've had a number of conversations over the years, and I was absolutely delighted to see him get his conviction quashed last year. But he is in a very strange and egregious situation, which is shared by Vipin Patel and Tara Adedayo. These three people had their convictions quashed at Southwark Crown Court, and the Post Office said that it was not in their interests, or not in the public interest, to re-prosecute them, but that it wasn't going to give them any interim compensation, as there appears to be some question marks over how connected to the Horizon system their prosecutions were in the first place. Now, this came up in the hearing today and was absolutely trammelled by Tim Maloney, wasn't it? He was having none of this. Basically, his point was that the Post Office had an opportunity to state to the court why they thought this was not the case, and the court should have had a ruling on it. The postmasters had, and their representatives had, no say in this. It was simply the Post Office's decision not to oppose their conviction being quashed. And that now that they are innocent people with no stain against their character, given how long they've had to live with this false prosecution, he thinks that it's egregious that the Post Office have basically decided to say, no, if you want to come after us for compensation, you've got to sue us for it. And I got the sense that Sir Wynne Williams was receptive to those arguments without making any sort of decisions or stating anything today.
Yeah, Parmod seemed relatively hopeful after the hearing. Let's hear what he had to say.
In 2001, the Post Office prosecuted me for theft. In 2002, I had a conviction whereby for 6 months. In 2015, after I saw the Panorama programme, I realised there was a problem with the computer system. And in last year, May 2021, I've just had my conviction overturned. But with the various Post Office compensation schemes that they're raising, I appear to be in limbo. There is no adequate scheme for myself, because the Post Office still do not accept that my overturning of the conviction was Horizon-related. I am now also a member of one of the 555 group, GLO group, but with the new scheme introduced with that, they're excluding postmasters who have had their convictions overturned for considering for any compensation for that as well. So I'm excluded from that scheme as well.
Your case was mentioned today in the hearing, wasn't it, by Tim Maloney?
I'm very grateful that the case was brought up by QC as one of the three who are in this limbo group where no compensation, no interim payment has been offered yet. And the judge, Sir Wynne Williams, I think he took it very seriously, and I think he understands the implications, but it remains to be seen for what his recommendations are going to be.
And how did you find today? What did you think of the whole proceeding?
It was very enlightening. It was very informative. Sir Wynne Williams, it all depends on him, and he was very understanding of the positions and the situation. I think it was quite a good session today. Otherwise,
so it kind of made you feel a bit hopeful, would you say?
Possibly, yes. Looking forward, my solicitors, Hudgels, are going to be presenting a full claim loss as suggested by Wynne Williams today.
Thank you so much to Parmod for speaking to us. It was great to meet him and speak to him. I also spoke to his daughter Sangeeta after the hearing about something that we're all really interested in exploring, and we're all kind of all working on in the background, which is a potential or apparent racial disparity in the way that postmasters of BAME background have been treated compared to white postmasters. And this is both by the post office and potentially also by the criminal justice system. This is a topic that we'll be doing more on in the coming weeks. We've spoken to an academic who is also interested in investigating it further. But we're particularly interested in speaking to postmasters with an Asian background or of Asian heritage. Any postmaster of colour who would like to speak to us about their experiences, because while it would be great to get some data, it's going to take us a while to do that.
Yeah, I have a theory that the post office were actually indiscriminate. They were racially blind in the amount of the way they treated their sub-postmasters. That might be wholly wrong, but I'm obviously only talking anecdotally. But I do have some significant concerns about the sentencing of the postmasters who went through the criminal courts. Again, this is purely anecdotal, which is why we all want to bottom this out with proper academic research. But it does seem as if the sentences and the punishments meted out to non-white sub-postmasters was potentially on balance worse than their white counterparts. Now, I know every situation is different, and that's why it needs research. And obviously getting hold of those sentences and finding out exactly who they happen to is going to be a bit of a slog, as we've found from approaching the post office on this earlier this year. But I just think it might be a valuable piece of research, because it doesn't just look into the post office Horizon scandal, it's also potentially says something about the wider criminal justice system and the sentencing thereof.
Yeah, absolutely, although I'm not letting the post office off the hook just yet. I think potentially there could be both, but okay. It's something that we really want to investigate further. Anyone that would be we've got some academics involved, and anyone that would like to speak to us about this, we would be really grateful to hear from you.
Fabulous. Does that conclude another episode of Investigating the Post Office Scandal? I think it does, doesn't it?
I feel like we've said everything there is to say.
Thank you very much for listening this far to what has been quite a lengthy and convoluted episode. It's going to be goodbye from us outside the International Dispute Resolution Centre. Just to do the sort of P's and Q's at the end of this piece, this podcast is produced by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace with support from Whistledown Productions, for which we are grateful.
Thank you for listening, and see you next time.